The last two verses of chapter 6, well, that was fairly clear. The second to last verse was explaining that out of the different types of human beings, the ascetic, the jnani, and the karmi, or really all different types of human beings, the yogi is the best. Then the last verse of chapter 6, was explaining that of all the yogis, the bhakti yogi is the best. And then the first verse of chapter 7 was briefly describing that system of yoga, like in a nutshell, what is that system of yoga? Otherwise, you all seem to be fairly clear. There's still a few papers here. Or maybe there's just a few devotees who haven't arrived. Murari Krishna is here. Dr. James. Not yet. S. Swaroop. What is it? Sahasra Swaroop. Dr. Nishal. Anyway, thank you all very much for doing so well in the test. It was very nice. I just hope I didn't make the test too easy for you. Anyway. Okay, so now... Now we're going to go on to chapter 8. And of course, to begin, we'll recite the Mangala Charana prayers from the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuramanatamiyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutanam Swayam Rupa Kadalayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamala Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabhadutam Virjana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Tamischa Hey Krishna Karana Sindho Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostite Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchikalpa Jarubhyas Cha Kripa Sindhu Ya Eva Cha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadatha Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare So now we'll go on to chapter 8, Attaining the Supreme. Now chapter 8 will probably go through a little more quickly than the other chapters we've been doing. There are some important points in chapter 8, but there's also some information like a description of the Yoga Mishra Bhakta, which, strictly speaking, is not, at least it's not as important as some of the other information in chapters that we have to cover, and which we haven't got a lot of time to cover, unfortunately. We have to cover, 11 chapters now in 9 days. So in some cases we're going to have to do more than one chapter in a day, and I think today maybe one of those. So, now to introduce chapter 8. Chapter 7, we know Krishna is, first of all, in the first verse, explaining in essence what is the nature or what are the basic practices of bhakti yoga. Principally that you have to be maya sakta mana. Your mind has to be attached to Krishna. And then he was explaining how we can attach our minds to Krishna, how we can think of him, different ways we can appreciate him within this material world. Then he talked about different people who may or may not become Krishna conscious. Then right at the end, second to last verse, he gave a description of a fifth category of pious person who may take to devotional service. Can any of you remember the name of that type of person? Yoga Mishra Bhakta. Now the Yoga Mishra Bhakta is going to be discussed a little bit in chapter 8. But why I'm referring to that verse and that's the second to last verse and the last verse also of chapter 7 is because Arjuna brings up, he mentions certain philosophical terms. And in the first two verses of chapter 8, Arjuna asks Krishna for definitions of these philosophical terms. We're just going to briefly look at it. So if you look at verse 29 of the 7th chapter, look at the Sanskrit, the third line. Krishna says, Te Brahma, they are Brahman. Then he says, he refers to the term Adhyatma and Karma. Adhyatma means transcendental or a transcendental living entity, and karma refers to material activity. Then if we turn to verse 30, Krishna says that if you know me in certain ways, then you can remember me during this life, and you can even remember me at the time of death. So, these ways in which you're meant to remember him, or particular features of his nature that you should remember him in. He says, Sa Adibhuta, the governing principle of the material manifestation. Adidaiva, the governing principle of all the demigods. And Adiyajna, the governing principle of all sacrifices. So Krishna says that if you can know me in these ways, then you can understand and know me, you can be Krishna conscious, even at the time of death. So now let us go on to chapter 8, verses 1 and 2. And here we see that Arjuna asks Krishna about these terms. So what is Brahman? Kim Tad Brahman? What is this Brahman that you're referring to? Kim Adhyatma? What is the transcendental self? Kim Karma? What is Karma? Kim Adibhutam? Kim Adidaivam? What are fruit of activities? What is the material manifestation? What are the demigods? Then turning over to verse 2, Adiyajna, who is this Lord of Sacrifice? And also, how does he live in the body? And then, Prayana Kale Chakatam, Gyeosi Niyatatmavi. How can the devotees know you at the time of death? So these are eight questions. Eight questions. And they're all related to the statements that Krishna has made in the last two verses of the 7th chapter. Now, in order to answer these eight questions, initially, Krishna speaks verses 3 and 4. Verses 3 and 4 answer all these eight questions except the last one. The last one being, how can the devotees know you, remember you at the time of death? So, the rest of the chapter, the rest of chapter 8 from verse 5 onwards is dedicated, basically, to answering the last question. How can the devotees know you at the time of death? But in verses 3 and 4, Krishna very briefly answers the other seven questions. So let's just quickly go through. Now, verse 3. So, Brahman. What is Brahman? The indestructible, transcendental living entity is called Brahman. And what is Adhyatma? What is the nature of the self? Well, his eternal nature is called Adhyatma. What is the nature of the soul? Satchitananda, Jivara Swarupaya Krishna Nityadas, to be eternal, fully conscious and blissful, and to be the eternal servant of Krishna. So that is Adhyatma. What is that? What are the eternal characteristics of the transcendental living entity who is known as Brahman? Then what is karma? Action pertaining to the development of the material bodies of the living entities is called karma. Then verse 4, the adibhuta, this physical nature which is constantly changing, the material manifestation, is called adibhuta. Then the adidaiva, this is an interesting one, very interesting. Adidaiva, Prabhupada translated as adidaiva, the demigods, in verse 1. But now, Prabhupada translates that the universal form of the Lord, which includes all the demigods, is called adidaiva. Because these demigods are not existing independently. I mean, this could bring us into a very deep philosophical discussion, which we don't have time for. But in the universal form of the Lord is all the functions that when the universe is actually manifest, all the functions which occur, like the functioning of all the planetary systems, the functioning of the weather, the functioning of our bodies and the bodies of all living entities, that's all there in the universal form. Now, how is it manifested? It's in the universal form, so how does it get down to this manifest level that we're on? Via the demigods. Via the demigods. So the demigods are actually, we know, they're acting on behalf of the Lord. And specifically on behalf of the Lord, as the Lord exists in his universal form. Of course, universal form we know is, it's actually an imaginary form. It's not exactly that there is an actual universal form as such. But what there is a state of matter prior to the actual manifestation as we see it. But there is a state of matter which is something like, you could say like the reservoir state. Everything is there. Everything's there. But it's all sort of mixed up together. So generally this would be referred to as being the universal form or something like Mahatattva or probably Mahatattva. So everything is there. But it's not manifest. So how does it get manifest? The Lord manifests the demigods. And then they take all the different functions and start distributing them and bringing them into a manifest state. So Adidaivama refers to the universal form, which is, it includes all the demigods. It's like the sum total of all the demigods. And who is the Adiyagya? The presiding deity of all sacrifices. Krishna says, I am. Adiyagya aham. I'm the presiding deity of all sacrifices. In my form, Atra Dehe, Dehabrita. As in my form as the supersoul in the hearts of all living beings. So anyway, that's how Krishna answers the first seven questions. Now the rest of the chapter is going to go on, and Krishna is going to describe or answer the last question, which of course is the most important one. How can the devotees know Krishna at the time of death? So the verse 5, this is now section B, which is verse 5 to verse 8. It's like a general description of the principle of reincarnation and the general principle of how to remember Krishna, including at the time of death. So in verse 5, Krishna explains what will happen if we remember him at the time of death. It's very worthwhile remembering Krishna at the time of death, because you can attain to his nature. So that's verse 5. Then verse 6 explains what happens if you don't remember Krishna. In fact, verse 6 is giving the basic principle of the whole science of reincarnation. That whatever state of being you remember when you die, you will attain to that state without fail. And what state of being are you likely to remember at the time of death? Not that you can just choose that, oh, the time of death is coming, okay, so what shall I remember? Oh, I think I'll remember Krishna. No, not quite like that. Not that simple. What you remember at the time of death is whatever you've been most absorbed in during the course of your life. You can't just make some sort of whimsical decision that, oh, I think I'll remember Krishna now. Why not? Not like that. You have to be very trained. You have to have cultivated Krishna consciousness throughout your life. And then you can remember Krishna. Otherwise, whatever it is, and everyone is absorbed in something, you can't be in a state of like mental blankness all your life. Everyone is remembering something. So whatever it is that you've remembered most, you'll remember that. It's unavoidable. You'll remember that at the time of death. So we have to be very careful. That's why we're going through this training process of Krishna consciousness, to prepare us for the time of death. One devotee gave a nice example that if you go to university and you're not really aware that the goal is to attend all the lectures and eventually pass the exam, then while you're at the university you can easily get sidetracked and think that this is a special forum for young people to get together and have parties and just enjoy life. You can think like that because there's a lot of that going on. So you party away and enjoy life. Then the exam comes and you think, oh, I don't need to worry about this. This is just some side issue. But then the next year you roll up at the university, but they won't let you in. And you may wonder, why not? I did everything right. I went to all the parties. I had a great time. But they won't let me in. So that's something like people in the human form of life. They don't really understand what is the real goal, that you're meant to be learning something and cultivating something. And the end of that cultivation is that you're meant to pass the exam, which is the time of death. But they think that, oh, life is here just for good, to have a good time, so I'll enjoy life. But then what happens is next life they won't get a human body. And they may wonder, why not? Why am I not allowed a human body? That's because they didn't use the human form of life for what it's intended for. So that's explained here. Now in verse 7, actually verse 7 is it's like a complete answer, a brief but complete answer to this eighth question of Arjuna's. How can the devotees remember you at the time of death? It's a very nice answer. Krishna says, you should always think of me in my form as Krishna and at the same time perform your prescribed duties, your prescribed duty of fighting. With your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without doubt. So that's very nice. That is like the answer, really. The answer. It's interesting that you have to vote, you have to do two things at the same time. One is you have to remember Krishna, not in some abstract way, but Krishna says you have to remember me in my form as Krishna. And at the same time, perform your duties. I know sometimes devotees think that I'm so busy doing my service that how can I think of Krishna? I have to think of this and that and, you know, whatever you're doing in your service. And we may say that, yes, that's nice because it's at least in relation to Krishna. But Krishna's saying here that you should actually remember me in my form as Krishna and perform your duty at the same time. This is Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, if we're not conscious of Krishna, the person, then our consciousness of Krishna may become a little vague. Krishna may become more like a principle, the big boss, who is far distant, but still I'm meant to do my duties to please him, but I don't really know who he is. And I don't really have so much of a personal understanding or relationship with him. But actually we should have a personal conception of Krishna. That means along with performing our duties very nicely, which we must do, we should cultivate a consciousness of Krishna, the person. Krishna, his pastimes, his qualities, like that, in a personal way. Otherwise, our Krishna consciousness can actually become a little impersonal. Then, verse 8, Krishna's stressing, fixing our minds on him, chetasa. Chetasa means our consciousness or our mind and intelligence. Na-anya gamina. Without deviation. Ananya. Na-anya. Without deviation, our minds should be fixed on him. We should always remember him. We should do like that. Baladeva Vijayabhushan makes an interesting point, an important point in this verse. Regarding the word abhyas. Abhyasa yoga yuktena. Prabhupada translates abhyasa yoga as practice. This word abhyas actually means practice, literally. So we are practicing. We are learning, putting our learning into practice. We're not expert. So you have to practice this. Cultivate remembering Krishna. Make an effort. Make a program of cultivation, working on remembering Krishna. If you're going to remember Krishna, you have to know something about him. And Baladeva Vijayabhushan says that if you practice remembering Krishna and practice developing Krishna consciousness in this way, then gradually you will overcome your material nature. We all have our material nature, our particular material bodies. And Varnashram, of course, is all to be understood in terms of the nature of our natures of our material bodies. But actually, we're not these material bodies, ultimately. Now, of course, as we've read in the first six chapters, we should be very careful about prematurely jumping to a transcendental, trying to assume a transcendental position if we're not qualified. But Baladeva Vijayabhushan is saying that if you do practice, then gradually you will overcome your material nature, which is good news, because if we have to stay restricted and under the influence of our material natures, that's not very nice, and it actually interferes with Krishna consciousness in many ways. So now going on to section C, verse 9 to verse 13. Krishna in verse 9 explains how you can remember him. This is along the lines of what Krishna was saying in the 7th chapter about being. We can remember him as the taste in water, the light of the sun and moon, and so on. So these are some ways that we can meditate on Krishna, super soul. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes a very interesting point about the word anushasitaram in the first line of verse 9. Prabhupada translates it as controller, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that that is correct. That is the meaning of the word anushasitaram. But another meaning, he says, is teacher or discipliner. So we should remember the Lord as teacher or discipliner. But not all the forms of the Lord act as teachers or discipliners. Like Lord Kurama, He doesn't come to teach. Lord Nrisimhadev, he doesn't really come to teach. So which are the forms of the Lord who particularly come to teach human society? Any suggestions? Right, yeah, forms like this. Actually, he says particularly Lord Ram and Lord Krishna. And other forms of the Lord who are teaching. Lord Kapila, you could say, that's a fact, but he's teaching a practice which is not exactly, not entirely at least, suitable for Kali Yuga. It's not a general practice. Lord Kapila is the Yuga avatar for Satya Yuga, and he's teaching silent meditation. Some of the principles we can definitely apply, but not all of them. But particularly Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is teaching universal principles. Lord Ram is also teaching fairly universal principles. So Vishnu Chakravani Thakur says that when the Lord uses this term Anushasita Ram, he's particularly referring to Krishna himself and Lord Ram. Then, verses 10 to 13 are describing Yoga Mishra Bhakti. And if you look in the purport, the, let's see, fifth line down, purport of verse 10, Prabhupada describes this yoga as Shat Chakra Yoga. This is another yoga. But if you, we won't read through all the verses, but if you've looked through already, as I hope you have, you'll see that it very much resembles Ashtanga Yoga. It's basically in that line at least. A lot of physical discipline, controlling the breath, and so on and so forth. So this is Yoga Mishra Bhakti. As he says here, one who at the time of death, remember we are discussing about how a person meets the time of death. So the Yoga Mishra Bhakti, when he meets the time of death, then if he fixes his life there between the eyebrows, and then engages himself in thinking of Krishna, then he can achieve the Supreme Lord. But if he doesn't, then verse 11 explains that this Yoga Mishra Bhakta, if he utters Omkar, if he doesn't actually specifically remember Krishna, then he may enter into the Brahma Jyoti, into the Brahman effulgence. Verse 12 is just description of some of the practices. Then verse 13, saying again, if the Yoga Mishra Bhakta vibrates the syllable Om, and then if he thinks of the Supreme Lord and then quits his body, then he will achieve Vaikuntha. But if he doesn't think of the Supreme Lord, if he just utters Om and does all his other yoga practices, then he'll enter into Brahman. So this is like, if you remember in our diagram of the yoga ladder, we had the broken arrow, the broken line going from Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga. Because if a person becomes very advanced in those systems of yoga, but by some good fortune or by some good association, they happen to remember the Supreme Lord at the time of death, then yes, they may go to the Supreme Lord. But otherwise they'll go to Brahman or maybe Paramatma, like that. So this is Yoga Mishra Bhakti, basically. Yoga Mishra. Mishra means mixed. It's bhakti which is mixed with yoga. So it's not really pure bhakti. Not really pure bhakti. So therefore he may achieve Krishna, he may not achieve Krishna. It just depends. But this is 14 to 16, section D, they're describing the pure devotees. Ananya Cheta, this term Ananya is going to come up a couple of times in this chapter, and in chapter 9 it comes up as being a very important term. Ananya Cheta means undeviating fixedness of the mind. Ananya Bhakti means undeviating bhakti. So the Sanskrit, at least according to Bhagavad Gita, the Sanskrit term for pure bhakti is ananya bhakti, undeviating. So Krishna says that for one who is ananya cheta, undeviating,